Welcome to the Inside Scoop Live podcast, where indie authors get personal about their books, their writing, and their passions. I'm your host, Sherry Hoyt. Join me for some lively conversations with debut indie authors and seasoned veterans alike. It's a great place to find your next amazing read or even get inspired. So sit back and enjoy the show and let me know what you think. Hi, everyone. Margaret Blankus joins the show today to talk about her latest novel, Welcome to Belchester. It's a story that intertwines the lives of a new doctor and a detective in a 1959 Shropshire County village as they navigate a jewel theft mystery. Before we get started, here's the inside scoop on the author. Margaret A. Blankus writes from her childhood home in South St. Paul, Minnesota, where she enjoys the changing seasons. Always a writer at heart, it was the COVID pandemic that challenged her to seek publication of her first novel, The Doctor of Belchester. Enthusiastic responses, as in, when's the next book coming out, and receiving an honorable mention for Best Catholic Novel in the 2023 Catholic Media Awards, encouraged Margaret to continue writing about the adventures of Dr. M.E. Senti. A proud graduate of the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University, Collegeville, she became an oblate of St. Benedict's Monastery in 2010. A lifelong learner who loves books and libraries, Margaret earned a master's in library and information science from the University of Wisconsin. In 2004, she contracted a rare autoimmune disease that forced an early retirement from her dream job as director for the Instructional Services Center for the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis from 1992 to 2004. When she's not writing, Margaret enjoys spending time with family, playing cards and board games, gardening, volunteering, and solving word and Sudoku puzzles. She and her identical twin sister, Mary, are enrolled in the University of Minnesota Twin Study, where they participate in many and varied research projects. Currently, they are participating in a study on twins and aging. You can learn more about Margaret and her work at margaretablankish.com. Well, hi, Margaret. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live.
Thank you for having me.
To get us started, why don't you give us a little background information on your book? What is Welcome to Belchester about?
Welcome to Belchester is the second book in the Dr. M.E. Senti series. The first book ends on Thursday, August 27th, 1959, and Welcome to Belchester begins the very next day. It begins in London's Metropolitan Police Department. Inspector William Donnelly is accepting a promotion and a transfer to the County of Shropshire's police force. A series of jewel thefts have been occurring in the southwest part of the county, and because of Inspector Donnelly's high conviction rate in the Met's Crimes Against Property Division, he is tapped to lead the investigation. His headquarters are to be in Belchester, and so on the following Monday, he sets about relocating to the village. That very day, Dr. Mary Elizabeth Senti arrives from London in Belchester to join Dr. Harold Burton in his medical practice. Welcome to Belchester is a story about how these two newcomers adjust to life in the village. I'm sure our listeners can empathize with Will and Mary Elizabeth as they recall for themselves what it's like to arrive in a town or at a new school and not know a soul. Readers and listeners will meet the village residents right alongside Mary Elizabeth and Will. And besides getting settled in Belchester, more jewel thefts occur for Will to solve. And perhaps there is the ignition of a slow burn romance?
I love that. Okay, little hints there. So what inspired the continuation of Dr. M.E. Senti's story in Welcome to Belchester? How does it expand upon the world that you established in the first book, The Doctor of Belchester?
Well, I realized that Mary Elizabeth's story is not over. There is so much more to tell about her because she's such an interesting character. And so the first book, The Doctor of Belchester, is about Dr. Harold Merton, the aging general practitioner for the small village. He travels to London in hopes of finding a young doctor that will join him in his practice back home. Of course, nothing is as simple or goes as Harold planned, and there are all sorts of twists and turns. In the book, there's a cast of memorable characters that I just wasn't ready to say goodbye to quite yet. And so, in this first book, readers really learn Mary Elizabeth's backstory. Because how does a young American doctor end up in this small rural village in Shropshire, England? I mean, that just, how does that happen? So this first book, The Doctor of Belchester, explains how she gets there.
Okay. Now, is Shropshire County Village, is that a real setting?
Well, actually, there's a real Belchester, Minnesota.
Oh.
That's located down by Rochester, Minnesota, in the southeast corner of the state. And I just love that name, Belchester. It sounds English to me.
Yeah, it does.
And so when I was looking for a name for my fictional village, I just came up with Belchester. But the setting for the story was really, really important. And so what I did is, this is really low-tech research. I called up AAA and asked them to send me a map of England.
Oh.
So I got this map because there were two criteria that were really, really important to the story. The first one is that I needed a rural farming area that was far enough from London, to feel isolated, but not too far away so that a day trip in 1959 by rail or road was still possible, because of course there were no superhighways back then.
Right.
And the second criteria was that I had to find a predominantly Catholic village. This was infinitely more difficult to find in Anglican England, let me tell you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It was quite a thing to do, but I discovered in my research the Plowden family. They were a prominent English recusant family who stayed Catholic before, during, and after the reign of Henry VIII. And they lived in Lydbury North, which is a real village in southern Shropshire County. So that's where I decided to place my fictional town of Belchester.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
For me, the setting was just really key. And then the other research I had to do was, because she's a doctor, I had to research medical conditions, treatments, medicines, all that sort of thing from 1959. And I have no medical background, so I relied on the internet a whole lot for those types of things.
Yeah.
I was constantly checking to see, okay, was this treatment available in 1959? The same is true with police procedures. Forensic science in the 1950s was still in its infancy. That is why I emphasize Will's interview and deductive skills so much in the book.
Yeah. Was there more research involved than you anticipated when you started the project?
My library background tells me I have to be truthful and authentic, so it was really important for me to get it right. And so I was checking everything just to make sure. And I'm not sure, just because I was limited to the internet, because I was writing this during COVID.
Yeah.
And then for authenticity, it helps that I was around in 1959. So I was 4 years old, but I was still around.
Oh, that's great.
So I remember the fashions, and I remember some of the social mores, of that time. There's one part in Welcome, where an injured person is being put on a stretcher to be transported by ambulance to the hospital, and Dr. Merton is giving instructions to the attendants. Well, I got pushback from my editor. She said, "Why is Dr. Merton giving them instructions? The paramedics should know what to do. This whole part is unnecessary." I had a reminder that in 1959, there were no such things as EMTs or paramedics. There were only attendants, and their job was to just transport the patient swiftly and carefully to the hospital. So Dr. Merton's instructions were in tune with the time.
Yeah, that's important. That's an important piece. Yeah.
We take so many things for granted.
Exactly. We have all the modern conveniences now. Yeah, that's the thing about historical. It's almost like historical fiction. You have to have it based in, reality. Yeah.
Actually, sometimes some people classify my book as historical fiction. I'm not real comfortable with that, but
It's not a historical fiction story, but it does have historical elements, like you said, with the paramedics and such. So I can see that. Yeah. So, can you share the foundational qualities and the motivations behind Dr. Mary Elizabeth Senti and Detective Inspector William Donnelly and how their relationship evolves throughout the story?
Well, I can tell you that, Mary Elizabeth has always been obsessed with becoming a doctor. When she was 10, she read the biography of Elizabeth Blackwell, who was the first American woman doctor. And so then from that time on, she was bound and determined to be a doctor, and she was never going to let anything get in the way of it. So she has always kept herself distance as far as romantic relationships go. She has almost shut that part of herself off because it would get in the way, because she had to be so focused. And it might surprise the listeners to know how unusual it was for a woman to be a doctor in 1959. Title IX didn't happen until 1972. So women in medicine were a rarity in both the UK and the US. Only 6% of doctors were female in the 1950s.
Oh, wow. Wow, that doesn't seem like it was very long ago. It seems like we've come a long way since then.
Very fast, too. I mean, even in my time,
Yeah, very fast. Wow.
We also know that Mary Elizabeth is a woman of faith. I mean, if you read the first book, you know that she's a good Catholic. She goes to Sunday Mass, Saturday confessions, recites the rosary daily, and in Welcome, she does go to Mass every day. And her belief systems were nurtured by her family, her parochial education, and her environment. Where she comes from, Stearns County in central Minnesota is very Catholic. 36% of the town's names come from the Catholic church that resides in the town. So that's pretty Catholic. So anyway, that whole environment is Catholic. And so she also believes that God puts people and opportunities in her way for a reason. So she often wonders why she is on this earth in this particular place at this particular time. I don't think that's unusual. I think all of us wonder that at least once in a while.
I think so. Does she find her answers?
Well, not quite, but not yet. Not yet. Maybe in the next book.
Okay.
In Welcome to Belchester, Mary Elizabeth has achieved her goal and is now a certified GP and begins to practice medicine. As she settles into the routine of village life, she begins to think that maybe there is something more to life than just her career, especially after she keeps bumping into a certain police inspector in different places and in different situations. But it's at the gala where these thoughts are now joined with strong feelings. These feelings that she has stuffed beneath her for so long now starts bubbling up to the surface. But because of her position in the village, she doesn't have any girlfriends that she can just go talk to. So because of her upbringing, she turns to the two people in the village she knows she can trust for sure. And that is Father Matthias Evanson, the parish priest, and Reverend Mother Bonifacius, the superior of the local convent. So she spills her heart out to those two people. Then we have Will.
That's right.
Then we have Will. We know that he is single, 32 years of age, with no serious girlfriend. When he is not working, he likes to play rugby, listen to classical and popular music, and gaze into the night sky with his telescope. His best friend is Trevor, a fellow detective. Trevor and his family have adopted Will. Trevor's kids call Will Uncle, and Trevor and his wife even named their youngest son after him. We learn that Will is a little bit jealous of Trevor's home life. So that's who he is. And before he joined the London's Metropolitan Police Department, he was in the military for 10 years. He was with the Red Caps, which is the UK's Royal Military Police. His military career took him all over the world, which has given him this ability to easily adapt into different situations. And his military training also made him disciplined and focused. And I'm sure as you meet Will, you're wondering, why isn't this guy married? He's the complete package: handsome, athletic, well-mannered, an excellent ballroom dancer. He doesn't smoke, and he's a not a heavy drinker. He's just an all-around decent fellow. And it's only when Mary Elizabeth is dancing with Will's brother at the gala that we learn the real reason for Will's single state.
More intrigue.
Oh, there's always intrigue. That's what makes it interesting. But Will's thoughts at the end of the gala, we know that now he's starting to think that maybe it's time to settle down. He's met Mary Elizabeth a couple of different times, and she's so different from the other women that he's ever known. Is she the one that he's waiting for? I mean, you know, you just don't know.
I love that.
So as the story continues, each of them are dealing with their feelings now. But just as things are starting to heat up for them, another jewel heist occurs and interrupts their romance. Will's time and attention is consumed with solving the case, and Mary Elizabeth has new patients to tend to. Does love stand a chance between these two dedicated professionals? So those are the questions that I posed in the book.
Okay, those are wonderful questions. Now, you have some very interesting other characters in your story too. Lady Beatrice Brantwell and Viscount LeBrosse play significant roles in the narrative. What inspired these characters, and how did they influence the plot and the main character's development?
Well, you know, as I was writing this story, it occurred to me that Lady Beatrice Brantwell is actually the linchpin for the entire book. So much of what happens in the book depends upon her. For example, because of the World War II connection between Chief Superintendent Williamson and Lord Brantwell, Lady Beatrice is asked to plan a gala, which is used as a ruse to flush out the jewel thieves. And later in the story, Will turns to her again to be part of a sting operation. And because Lady Beatrice is such a notorious matchmaker, she is responsible for pairing Mary Elizabeth and Will together at the gala when the sparks really start to fly. And then as her story gets revealed, we learn why she is more comfortable being around the commoners like Mrs. Winters and Father Evanson than she is with her own elite social circle. And so my aim was to make her a more complex character than just your stereotypical socialite. And actually, you know, she's a delightful character. I mean, she just makes me laugh. I mean, you gotta have some of those in the book, you know, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that she is a bit deeper than what you would think of as a social elite, you know, that she actually feels more connected to, as you said, the common people, the everyday Joes, right?
Yeah. Right, right. Well, you'll find out why in the story.
Okay.
She has a very interesting backstory, a very interesting backstory, yeah. Then we have the Viscount, and he, to me, is a man of mystery. And someday I hope he tells me his story, because he is a very complex character.
Oh, he hasn't done that yet, huh?
Not totally, no. Actually, the only one that knows him really well is Father Evanson. And that's because they have history together. They worked together during World War I. And we find out that the Viscount's title was given to him. He earned it. It wasn't a hereditary title. And it was given to him by the King of Belgium for his service during World War I.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's a real interesting character. And he has a soft spot in his heart for Mary Elizabeth, and Father Evanson knows why, but they haven't told us yet why.
Now, you mentioned a gala that Lady Beatrice Brantwell organized, and that it sounds like a pivotal event in the story. How did you go about creating this scene, I guess, to serve as a background for the characters and a turning point in the jewel theft plot?
Well, actually, we hear about the gala in chapter one. So right from the beginning, we know that there is going to be this gala sponsored by Lord and Lady Brantwell. And so there's, you know, tension builds, you know, because everybody's getting excited about this gala and everything. And everyone except Mary Elizabeth, because she's not real high on these frou-frou type things, you know. And she's, you know, she's a farm girl and she's just down at home and, you know, doesn't get into all these ritzy things. So Lady Beatrice takes her under her wing and she does a Cinderella transformation for her, you know. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
takes.
so it's kind of fun. But at the gala is where things really happen. We get, like I said, the sparks flying between Mary Elizabeth and Inspector Donnelly. And we get another jewel theft that evening. And I
At
think
the gala.
at the gala, yeah. Yeah, so even though they were doing all this planning, you know, to build a trap to capture these jewel thieves, well, the jewel thieves outsmarted them this time.
Oh, they were one step ahead. Okay.
Yeah, so
Now,
then that's the rest of the book is the police trying to catch up to these people and bring justice. Yep.
So now in this theft, the theft of Mary Elizabeth's agate pendant adds a personal stake for her in the mystery. What does this pendant symbolize for Emmy? Mary Elizabeth is called Emmy by her friends, I understand. And
Yes.
how does its theft impact her character?
Well, you have to understand about agates. The agates came from her family's farm fields. When you plow a field, you of course you break up and you expose more of the bring up more of the dirt and everything like that. That's when you find the agates. And my uncle on the Blankish family farm, he could spot an agate from the seat of his tractor. Because agates are really special because they're a little bit translucent because they're made of quartz and everything like that. And agates can be very valuable, and they are so beautiful and they are so unique. There are no two agates the same because of the lines are different, the coloring is different. And agates
Yeah.
are the official gemstone of Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yep. So anyway, and when you get an agate, I mean, it's looks rough. I mean, it's very rough and it doesn't really look very beautiful because sometimes you have to cut the agate with a diamond saw in order to reveal all the lines that are inside. And that's how you make the jewelry. You cut the agate with a diamond saw and then you have a setting. And so you, again, with the diamond saw, you cut the agate to fit the setting and then you put it in a tumbler and then you tumble it for days to smooth it out, get the rough edges out, and then you change the grit to a polish and put it back in the tumbler for a couple of days, and then you get that nice smooth polish that really brings out the lines and the color and things like that. And then you have to set it into your setting. So it's very labor intensive and it takes a long time to turn an agate you find in the field to a piece of jewelry. But that's what Mary Elizabeth's, just like my uncle, what they did during the wintertime is they did it for kind of a hobby.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it means so much to receive a piece of jewelry like that because you know the time and effort that it took to create that piece of jewelry. And it comes from the earth. So it comes from your family's farm, your identity. So there's a lot that goes into it for a lot of us, you know. And my own father, that picture that I sent you, I'm wearing an agate pendant. And my father made that pendant
Oh, wow.
that I'm wearing in that particular picture. So you can kind of see what that would mean for a person to get a gift like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It sounds like you draw on some of your personal experiences to add to the story, too, to make it more authentic.
Don't you think that makes it more fun?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that in the first book, there's a scene at an Italian restaurant. Well, I had an uncle who was a first generation Italian. His parents came over from Italy and he married my aunt. And so he was my godfather. And when I was writing the book, he passed away at the age of 91 after a nice long life. So to honor him, I named the host of the Italian restaurant after my uncle.
How nice.
Yeah, so I mean, so it's got little touches like that, which make it fun to write. And then my dad's brother was called Matthias, and he was a priest. And so that's where I get all the priesty stuff from. It's from him. And he had a housekeeper named Martha. And she was his housekeeper for like 35 years. And she was part of the family. He was for the Archdiocese of Denver, so to drive to Minnesota, that was like a 12, 14-hour car ride back in the day. And so she would come along with him because she knew how to drive. So the two of them would take turns driving. And so when he came home on vacation, she would come with him and spend time with our family. So, I mean, that's why I get so upset with the Father Brown mysteries, because they got it all wrong. I mean, the parish secretary would not be making meals for Father Brown or doing the dishes or things like that that you see her do a lot of times in the show. So that's not really authentic. He would have had a live-in housekeeper, because back in the day in the 1950s, being a housekeeper was a legitimate profession for widows or people like my great uncle had a housekeeper. Well, she had only had an eighth grade education. So what else was she to do? What else could she do? So she was a live-in housekeeper. So people had live-in housekeepers back in the 50s, and there was no shame in that. It gave these women a roof over their head and employment. So I wanted to honor my uncle and his housekeeper, Martha, too. So that's where those characters came from.
Nice. I love that. And that also solves the dilemma of what to name your characters too, if you bring in some personal references. So
Right. And I have a large family, so I will never run out of people to name characters after, for sure.
wonderful. Now, you talked earlier about the Viscount not revealing his story to you yet. So, I guess in reflecting on the process of writing Welcome to Belchester, were there unexpected challenges or unexpected discoveries that came up while you were developing and writing this sequel?
Well, to be honest, I wrote this story first. This was the first story I wrote.
Really?
And then, as I took it to reviewers and beta readers, they said, well, these characters aren't developed. And then I thought to myself, well, how do I explain this American doctor ending up in this small village in Shropshire? Because Shropshire is kind of hidden away. It's right next to Wales and it's very rural and doesn't get much attention from anybody. And so I had to explain that. And so, in order to explain that, I wrote the first book, The Doctor of Belchester. So I kind of worked backwards in a sense.
So it's like the first book that you wrote was Welcome to Belchester, and then The Doctor of Belchester is kind of like the prequel to the story.
Exactly. Yes. Because in my logical head, that made more sense.
I get that. I get that. We talked a little bit about how you draw inspiration from your own experiences. Were there any specific influences that shaped the setting, characters, or plot of Welcome to Belchester?
Well, I guess the one thing I'd like listeners to know is that Mary Elizabeth is the person that I always wanted to be when I was growing up. I wanted to be this self-assured, smart woman who was a doctor. Because when I was 10, I read Elizabeth Blackwell's biography, and I was so touched by it that I wanted to follow in her footsteps. And I always wanted to do something that was non-traditional. And I kept that dream until I hit high school, where I had biology, chemistry, physics. And at that point, I realized that a career in the sciences was not in my future.
That would do it for me as well.
That was it. So in many ways, Mary Elizabeth is the person I always wanted to be.
Oh, I love that. Now, the cozy mystery genre has a dedicated fan base with a rich history. How do you see Welcome to Belchester fitting into, or maybe diverging from, the traditional cozy mystery conventions?
Well, when I was writing the story, I was just writing a story, so I wasn't concerned about genres or where it might fit in or categorizing, what category it might fit in. I wasn't really interested in that. I was just trying to write a really nice story that people, especially elderly people, would enjoy, because that's why the print is so big in my books is because they're printed in large print for a purpose. I was aiming for a specific audience.
Right.
I wanted something that my ladies at church would enjoy and would not be offended by. So there's not a lot of violence in it. And like a cozy mystery, if there is, it kind of happens off screen and you just kind of hear about it later or whatever. And so we check that box. And then we can check the box about the amateur sleuthing because while Will is a professional and he's trying to solve these jewel heists, we have Father Evanson and Viscount LaBrosse doing a little sleuthing of their own. And I'm not going to give it away what they found. It is significant. So that's another check mark for the cozy mystery is we have these amateurs doing a sleuthing. And then the third thing is that it's set in a small, tight-knit community like Belchester. So in that sense, I guess Welcome is a cozy mystery. But I used cozy in the sense that it just feels warm and fuzzy.
Like quaint,
Yeah, a feel-good book that people could read it and be taken away to another time, another place for a couple of hours and just feel enjoyment, you know? I was hearkening back to the sitcoms that I used to watch in the 60s, you know, like Mayberry and all those sorts of things. So that those were kind of like that, you know, took place. Everybody basically was good, you know, type of thing. And I think we just need to throw in a little more kindness into the world, a little more gentleness, because it's all in your face these days. And it's just, we're kind of losing part of our humanity. So this was my small attempt to bring us back to a, you know, a more kinder humanity.
So I'm curious, what do the ladies that attend your church think of your novels?
They love them.
Isn't that nice?
And they're already saying, well, when's the next one coming out? You know?
No pressure, right?
No pressure, no. And but you know, I guess I would, if I had to categorize my books in any way, I'd just say they're clean fiction. You wouldn't have to worry about your teenagers reading my books. I think Mary Elizabeth's a good role model for young women. And then you wouldn't have to worry if you wanted to buy a gift for your elderly parents for Christmas or something. You wouldn't have to worry about that either. You know, they might enjoy this too. So that's why I did it this way. And even though my characters are Catholic, you know, I had to write what I know. But I think they're Catholic with a small c, which means universal. So I think my characters have a universal appeal. And so I wouldn't characterize my book as a Catholic book that only Catholics would enjoy. I don't think that's true.
Well, what does the future of the series look like? I know you have people asking for your next book already. How do you envision the future of this series?
One, maybe two books more, but I can't say more
Oh, okay. Top
I don't
secret.
want to give away too much of the plot, but let's just say the main characters, Mary Elizabeth and Will, it'll be their story going forward through some bumps in the road for them coming up and some challenges. And then there's still a couple of characters that people really loved from the first book. Her name is Matron Carruthers, and she was kind of the antagonist to Mary Elizabeth in the first book, well, the Doctor of Belchester. And so I have to bring her back because people are wanting to see more of her. And I do have an idea of how to do that.
Okay, nice. You must appease your fans, right?
Yeah, and although she was not my favorite character, let me tell you, so it's going to be a challenge.
Was she harder to write, in your opinion?
Yes.
Because she was a
And I,
villain.
yes, and because what made her hard to like, hard to love, is kind of my shadow side. So I had to face my shadow side, and of course, that's never fun. That's
Well, it sounds interesting. We'll have to see what she gets up to in this next novel. Now, are you writing this now? Do you have like a timeline of when you expect to finish it, or do you just go at your own pace and when it's finished, it's finished?
When it's finished, it's finished. Yes, I haven't written one word on a piece of paper yet, but the idea is in my head for how the next novel is going to go. I just have to figure out if I can fit everything in one novel or if I have to do it into two books.
I see. Okay.
That's the big challenge because this book, Welcome to Belchester, is 652 pages. It's really big, and I don't want to do that again. But I felt I had to because I had so many balls up in the air that I had to get some of resolution for some of the problems or some of the situations in that book. But I don't want to do that a big book like that again.
I was thinking it was more because of the large print issue. I'm sure that adds a few pages to it.
Oh, it does. But the interesting part is I wrote The Doctor of Belchester in 3 months.
Oh, wow.
And that was, to me, that book was finished, and the action took place in 3 days, and that's all it needed. And so that was only 262 pages or something like that, large print.
Oh,
So
wow. Okay. Yeah.
I'm aiming for something in between the two of them.
Yeah. Happy medium. That sounds good. Yeah.
Yes, and more manageable, much more manageable.
Right. Well, Margaret, is there anything else you wanted to share with us today?
Just that The Doctor of Belchester was my first book, first time I ever attempted even a book. And I love writing, and it's my passion now in my retirement.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing a little bit about you and your work. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much, Sherry. I
Yeah.
just enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for joining me today for my interview with Margaret Blankush, author of Welcome to Belchester. You can learn more about Margaret and her work at margaretablankush.com. And be sure to check out our other interviews at insidescooplive.com.